Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown, post Arizona Cardinals Vikings debacle in the desert. I'm your co-host, Joe Oberle, and I'm here with our producer, Mike Woldham, in the background, and the guy you can see, Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark is 19 years veteran of the covering the Vikings for the Star Tribune and StarTribune.com, and he's an NFL insider for many years with a huge history behind him covering the NFL. And he's the only man in town with a vote for the Hall of Fame. And now that we've taken up the whole first segment introducing Mark and his credentials, Mark, what do you got to say?
It looks like you're on like an episode of Life Below Zero there. Are you going to go out and kill a bear or something like that or what?
Well, that's just it. You know, I wanted to tell the listeners that we have a treat for them this time because last episode, my dog Daisy back in Fridley got on the podcast. But the good news is I'm gone. I'm not at home. I'm up north in Grand Rapids with some old high school buddies and doing a little golfing, doing a little hiking, doing a little beer drinking. And, you know, if you hear any animal noises this time, it's probably those guys. So, yeah, in the background. But anyway, on to the Vikings. Mark, this season seems to have gotten off the rails after two games. They lost one game that they should have won back in Cincinnati because the best player fumbled. And then they surprised a decent team out in the desert and literally kicked that one away. So calls for the changes of the coaching staff are increasing. And even though we saw a better performance. So what do you think? What's going on there? What do you think?
Well, in tomorrow's paper, I'm going to throw a flag on Zimmer for violating the Parcells mantra. This is a Parcells protege saying not once but twice in 2 days, you know, we're two plays from being 2-0. And, you know, Parcells, of course, popularized the phrase, you are what your record says you are. But in Zimmer's defense, I get what he's saying. You know, Sunday's game was encouraging other than the fact that the Vikings have yet another missed field goal in their scar tissue. But the way they played in Arizona versus the way they played at Cincinnati was night and day. The execution, the effort was so much better. I mean, Kirk Cousins was fantastic. I don't say that a whole lot. Offensive line came off, fired off the ball, played exceptionally well. Dalvin Cook was all pro form. Defense played well enough to win. That's as much fight as we've seen in that defense in a long time. And then the kicker misses the kick, which he should have made. If I'm Zimmer with their history, I'm maybe using those 20 or 30 seconds to get a little closer, maybe take one shot into the end zone. But then again, if they did that and it was interception, it would have been, well, why didn't he kick the field goal? But maybe I would have moved a little, tried to move a little closer. But, you know, it is encouraging how they play. But, yes, they are 0-2. That's the bottom line. And they got a three-game home streak right now coming up.
So what you're saying is the season's not over yet. We don't have to stop doing this podcast forever because the Vikings are done. We can take a breath and we can keep going, huh?
Well, I do agree with Zimmer. If they play like this, you know, like that first half, you know, compare the two first halves. Cincinnati, it's a 10 penalties. You know, this one was no penalties, and they played crisp, and you know, they were running the ball well. The offensive line, I thought, as bad as they were in Cincinnati, they were that good in, and it was also a good game plan with how they handled things. A little more help for the tackles, shorter passes, quicker. Just they just move quicker, and you can do that whenever it's second and six instead of second and 20. So yeah, it's if they play like this, they will win some games. You know, they're going to win some games, but the key now is to get a win or two before it gets to 0-3, 0-4. And then it just kind of goes off the rails. But it's not off the rails yet. They can win some games. They can certainly beat Seattle at home. If you know that first time they've had a home crowd in 2 years. Yeah, I mean, it can get back on the rails as quickly as it goes off the rails.
That's the NFL. Well, let's start with a little bit what went right. for the Vikings on Sunday. Kirk Cousins, you mentioned him, and he did have a good game. 22 of 32 for 224 and 3 scores and no picks. He has no turnovers this year and a 122.4 rating. He played right along with a dynamic Kyler Murray and led his team on a near-perfect final drive to set up the win. But once again, it's the same result, a loss. We finally give Kirk a pass on this one, but he played a really good game.
Yeah, he played an outstanding game, I think. And he had time. I mean, things worked around him. The offensive line gave him time to throw. He actually outrushed Kyler Murray. He had 35 yards rushing. He made 2 runs for 35 yards. You know, the touchdown pass to Jefferson was a Kyler Murray type play. I mean, who I can't believe I'm even saying that about. He rolls to his left, buys time, ducks a defender, and that allows Jefferson to, you know, he can't cover Justin Jefferson for 5-6 seconds or whatever it was. He escapes out to the corner of the end zone, and Kirk hits him. So Kirk Cousins played a fantastic game. The offensive line played a fantastic game. Dalvin Cook was he took a lot of wear and tear in that game. Hopefully he's healthy for this week. But, yeah, the offense was really, really good.
Yeah, we got to see more of that from Kirk no matter what. You know, he's got to keep playing that consistent and things are going to get better. You know, you mentioned the offensive line, and they had one of their better games that they've had in a long time. You know, they eliminated the penalties from last week, like you said. They opened up plenty of room for Dalvin, and they only allowed 1 sack. You know, even bigger than that, they neutralized Chandler Jones. So do you think, Mark, is this a sign for the future? Can they? I mean, you say if they continue to play, but can they? Is this the real line here, or is it an anomaly? You know, and last week was what we're –
Yeah, I think one thing that people like us lose sight of when we're jabbering on about this stuff is the emotion that these guys play with. After that Cincinnati game, the impression I got of the offensive line was that they played pissed off. They played as if, like, hey, you know, we're better than that. We're tired of hearing that we're garbage. I'm sure Zimmer and offensive coaches lit a fire under them. I mean, they're professionals, but they're still human beings, and they came out and they were. They played extremely hard, I thought, and if they can keep doing that, they're going to get results like that. If they keep playing if they go back the way they played in Cincinnati, where it's false starts left and right and holding penalties left and right, and guys are on their back getting run over, playing too high, not playing hard enough, then it goes back the other way. So yeah, it's like 17 individual seasons with this league. And, you know, they're going to be at home, so I would imagine it's going to be a good effort based on how they played in Arizona.
You're right. You know, emotion has so much to do with it. I'm a proponent of that, you know, focusing on that in football because it requires that. But did Scheme have a little bit to say with how the offense, you know, took care of Chandler Jones and kept Kirk clean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at it, I think it was, overall, like 27 runs, 32 passes. It was very well balanced. There was a lot of, like on the touchdown pass to KJ Osborne to start the game, Conklin's over on the left side helping the tackle. He's actually blocking Chandler Jones at that point. There was a lot of, Chandler Jones is here, so they throw it over his head quick, or they go to the other side. Because Chandler Jones, especially earlier in the game, was going, right side to left side, back and forth. Seemed like he settled more over the left tackle toward the end of the game. But yeah, they there's quick passes, help whether it was a tight end or C.J. Ham chipping him, or even the K.J. Osborne going out for a pass. He's nudging him or chipping him before he goes out on his pattern. So, yeah, the game plan was so much better for a pass rusher like that. And J.J. Watt on the other side, I don't even remember hearing his name. So they had a good plan and real good execution. And it was crisp execution because there wasn't any penalties until, I think, first one was O'Neal midway through the third quarter, false started or something. So it was just a real crisp, both from the planning standpoint and the execution, I think.
We get to credit Clint Kubiak with a good game then.
I think so. I think it was a good game. It was a winnable game against a, you know, the Cardinals, I don't know how many people picked them to make the playoffs. I know they're in an incredibly tough division, but that was my surprise team. I had them getting a wild card, maybe the fifth or sixth wild card or the first or second wild card spot. That's a good team. I mean, that's a very, very talented team that added this Rondale Moore, who a rookie second round draft pick, who's given them, you know, a lot to that offense. And then the tight end from Minnesota. I mean, that guy looks like he's about 12 feet. Looks like Paul Bunyan out there. So they've got a very, very talented offense and a very, very talented defense.
We talked about this dude last week, but KJ Osborne shined again as the wide receiver 3 at 5 receptions for 91 yards and a score. And I kind of want to cement him in there. I mean, he's doing everything they ask. But, you know, then here's the negative side of it for me. How long before Justin Jefferson gets impatient for more emphasis in his game and his targets?
Well, yeah, I know you've said that, but, you know, he still had 10 targets, the most in the game. Still had 6 catches, still scored. As long as receivers can find the end zone and do their little dances, they tend to be happy. So, yeah, I think you know, this Osborne's going to get opportunities because of Jefferson being a superstar. When you're a superstar, you get extra attention. The long touchdown to Osborne was basically him. You know, they blew the coverage. The corner got caught looking in the backfield, and Kirk just, you know, dropped it in his bread basket on the way to the end zone. But this guy continues to impress me with how he made another really tough catch of a hard thrown ball in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. On third down late in the game. So he, you know, like the fourth down catch that he made in Cincinnati, it's a bullet and it's like point blank and he catches it for the first down. So yeah, we're seeing, if this guy continues at this pace, it's only going to be better for, you know, as you saw, Thielen scored again, and Jefferson scored. So it's, it helps him, doesn't hurt him.
Here was my biggest whew of the week. Danielle Hunter, 3 sacks, 4 hurries, 7 tackles. What did you think of that performance? Is he back from his year off with the neck injury? I mean, that was fun to watch again, to see him in the backfield and harassing Kyler Murray, a guy that quick.
Oh, yeah. He's back for sure. I mean, not only 3 sacks, and the 1 sack is in the fourth quarter. It would have been a game-turning play. It was a game-turning play. The game just turned back the other way. But he also had a tackle. You know, this is Kyler Murray. This is the fastest guy in the league, I think, and a guy that's probably the most escapable guy in the league. It's kind of funny when you go from Kyler Murray to Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson looks like the slow guy. So he had a tackle for no gain when Murray was trying to get out. Murray also, you know, I know that they blew contain a few times. The Stephen Weatherly rushed too shallow, and they got the 77-yard touchdown. But there were also a lot of rushes where Murray couldn't get around Danielle Hunter. Hunter didn't have any stat on the play, but it stopped him. I think there's 3 or 4 balls where he threw the ball away. They tried a flea flicker that normally would catch a team off guard, but Murray had to scramble to his left and throw the ball away. So, you know, it's weird saying this about a guy who threw for 400 yards against you, but I think defensively they played pretty well against this guy, and he still gets 400 yards passing. And there were some breakdowns, but I think overall they got to be happy with how they played the guy.
I agree. I thought the defensive line, especially interior, played a little bit better. You know, they contained Murray from, and that was my biggest fear going in, him getting outside the tackles and out of the box and down the field. And they kind of kept him in check. There was some rushing stopping issues, but I think they played together. And I think they're going to build too. When you say that, they're going to keep building on what they're doing and get a little bit better each week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I you know, in saying that they did well against him, he still did some Kyler Murray things, you know.
Yes.
Outside the pocket. To.
Yeah.
You know, the quarterback draw, you know, he's, you know, Harrison Smith, you could say, is a little late in coming up to get him. But, my goodness, it's like at some point you got to give the other side credit, because it's Kyler Murray at a full sprint for the end zone, and Harrison's trying to come up, and it's too late. So he has a rushing touchdown. He had a 9-yard run on a 3rd and 6. So yeah, he got his plays, but I think overall, you know, they played, you know, pretty well against him, and it's a good sign if they play that way, because they have yet another guy coming in that can do
right
similar things.
Yeah, I want to talk about the secondary a little bit. Like I said, 29-36 for 400 yards and 3 touchdowns for Murray. So they had a tough day, and one person in particular was Mr. Breland for the second week in a row. Got toasted a little bit. We saw Cam Dantzler come in at the end of the game and make a play. Are we going to see more of Dantzler going forward and less of Breland as a result of what we've seen?
I think we might. I think Zimmer made reference to the Dantzler practice better. You know, my sense is that Dantzler's got some, like Mackenzie Alexander and some of the other younger corners under Zimmer. Maybe there's a little attitude adjustment that needs to be done, because he's made some references to some how he practiced and doesn't want to play or has mentioned that he needs to play special teams in order to get, you know, to dress on Sundays. Yeah, I could see. I mean, they're picking on Breland. It's obvious. And Dantzler did have a nice he did celebrate one where the receiver dropped the ball. I thought that was a little extreme. But then he did have a nice play, I think, on AJ Green in the end zone.
Yep.
So he's a good player. He's got a lot to learn. But if you know, they're going to be thinking about, you know, because Breland's getting picked on. I mean, the guy that's looking great is Peterson, because he's not really being challenged. And I think there's only one pass where he gave up when Murray was scrambling all over the place and Hopkins escaped into the corner of the end zone and scored. But other than that, they two teams have just left Peterson alone because they know they can go to the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, something's got to give there. Another thing that didn't go right after a great week by the special teams last week, they laid a goose egg on Sunday, 32-yard punt, a missed extra point, and, of course, Ryde White on 37-yard potential game winner. Where do we go from the special teams? I know you wrote a little bit about it this week in the Star Tribune about Zimmer and his what he thought of his kicking game. What can you tell us about that performance?
Well, I also didn't like the decision to squib kick. I know that they before the half.
Yep.
I know that you're trying to get some time off the clock, but the way the squib went up the middle, the guy fields it at the outside the 20 and gets to the 34 before he gets tackled. And it's like, you know, on the other side is Matt Prater. I mean, 64 yards is his range. I mean, he's 15 years into the league, but he still has the record for longest field goal in the history of the league at 64 yards. You know that he's going to be he doesn't have to go very far to give him a chance to take the lead at halftime. So I would have Joseph is an automatic touchback, it seems. If he wants to kick it out of the end zone, he does. I would have gone with putting him back farther rather as opposed to giving up, you know, having him take 4 seconds off the clock. I didn't like that. Special teams. I didn't D.D. Westbrook fielding the punt inside his, I believe it was inside the 5.
Right.
Or 6-yard line, and you know he's going to be an exciting punt returner, I think. But in that situation, maybe you let it bounce and hope for the touchback. So I didn't like that. And then Joseph is a maddening guy because, you know, last week he hit the game tying 53 yarder as regulation ended, and then he hits 252 yarders. But when that pressure was cranked up, you know He didn't do it. So it's going to be really interesting to see going forward, because I think this team is going to be playing a lot of shootouts and they're going to need their kicker at the end of games. And also they need to, you know, you could just tell when they missed that extra point that they were going to be chasing that the whole game. And that bothered them. That haunted them the entire rest of the game.
You know, you mentioned the squib kick, and the guys that I watched the game with, that was a point of consternation. We were struggling with that. What, you know, we were saying clock versus yardage. What's the thought process there? But so I agree with you. But even more so, and you touched on this earlier, that last drive, they were moving. Cousins was dealing. He really was. And I don't know how often I've ever said that. They were moving up the field, and they had 40 seconds left. They had plenty of time, a timeout left. And they just let it walk off or drain off the clock and kick the field goal. Was that a reaction to last week? And we're afraid that they're going to fumble or something bad's going to happen, because I thought they were moving against a gassed defense that they'd kind of put on their heels for most of the game, and certainly on that drive. What do you think went into that decision? I mean, you got to kind of read with the tea leaves with Zimmer. Yeah. What do you think there?
Yeah, I think if you're afraid in that situation, you shouldn't be paying your quarterback $30-some million. I mean, frankly, that's what they pay him for. He hasn't proven to be that type of quarterback a lot. But they're playing a team that had 6 sacks the week before. I mean, Chandler Jones had 2 forced fumbles. One was a touchdown, and one was a turnover.
Good point.
They were controlling that defense, and they were marching on that defense. And I keep playing if I'm them. Zimmer liked where they were, and the way he explained it, it's they're indoors. The kid's kicking great. Perfect surface. He liked the kick. So that was his decision. I don't blame him. I blame the kicker. The kicker should have made that kick. But if I'm him, I go for more yardage.
Yeah, so do I. I guess that's
but then again, like you said, last week they lose a fumble. So I guess, we'll never know what would have happened. I just know the way that game was going, I would have been like, hey, let's try and finish this before the kicker has a chance to miss.
You're right. And like you said earlier, they're human. Those things never quite leave your head. That loss last week, that fumble. So that doesn't inform it somehow, but we'll take a break here now after that and put that game behind us and look ahead to the Seahawks coming next week. So we'll be right back on the Vikings territory breakdown. All right, we're back. Looking forward to the Seahawks. But before we do that, we have to look back again. I really enjoyed your story, Mark, in the Star Tribune this week on the first Vikings victory, their first game they ever played. And they upset they were the champion Bears, I think, the defending champion Bears. And the Vikings upset them with Fran Tarkenton at the helm. I didn't see the game, but I was alive for the game.
I was not alive. I can't say that about many games, but I was not alive for that game.
Yes. I just want to ask a few quick questions. How did you find the research for that story? Because it's nice for me to have that on record. I thought it was a great to see that story in the paper so that I'm sure there's plenty of fans that don't even know about that. That was a big deal back then. And I think it was one of those things that set the Vikings on, their fandom and kind of that base that everybody can look back to in the early days. So it was nice to have that on record. What did you think how did you find the research on that? How was that?
Well, first of all, the Bears were not the defending champions. The defending champions were the Eagles and coached quarterback by the Vikings 1961 head coach Norm Van Brocklin. Think about this. Van Brocklin goes from MVP and winning the 1960 championship to becoming a head coach at 34 years old. It'd be like if Aaron Rodgers was head coach of the Browns right now or something. So, as far as the research, Joe, I probably have spent more time in the 60s of the NFL than I have in the 2020s or 10s. A lot of historical pieces. I enjoy the history of the NFL. From Cleveland, so I always enjoyed the history of the Browns. Came here and started doing Hall of Fame stories. A lot of this stuff that was in that story, I've talked to about with guys, Jim Marshall and Fran Tarkenton and Dave Osborne and guys like that. I just really enjoy their stories because they're so, it's like the essence of the NFL. Today it's such a whitewashed, scrubbed up, sterile league when guys talk most of the time. And back then, talking to the guys about how it was back then is just kind of refreshing for me in that just the stories that they're able to tell. And one of my favorite stories is about, they're talking about Storman Norman, Norm Van Brocklin and his volatility and how much he just cussed at him and called him all kinds of names and just how he was this, hard drinking, fist flying guy. And there was a situation on this, it wasn't in this game, but an example of his volatility was a call went against the Vikings and he was so upset and he was trying to get the official's attention and he's running down the field and the guy wouldn't turn. And so he Norm Van Brocklin always had coins in his pocket, always jingling these coins nervously. So he takes out a handful of coins and throws it at the official to get his attention. So That might have got you fined, I think, in today's NFL. But as far as that game, I mean, it was a great upset. You know, Fran Tarkenton calls it the greatest upset in the history of the NFL. I don't know if it's that extreme, but it was a ragtag group from Minnesota coached by an inexperienced coach going up against, you know, Papa Bear Halas and the Bears. And George Halas was, you know, mostly responsible for Minnesota getting an NFL team. They had already accepted an AFL team, backed out, and took the NFL offer. So, and then Tarkenton doesn't start in the game. They give George Shaw the start. Tarkenton comes in and has he was Kyler Murray before Kyler Murray was Kyler Murray. I mean, he was the first guy. Nobody was doing that in 1961, running around the way that all older Vikings fans, and myself, I remember Fran. I mean, obviously watching Fran Tarkenton. And he was just it was just something you didn't see before. Everything was Johnny Unitas, the stoic guy who never left the pocket. Norm Van Brocklin was that way. I didn't see him play, but then along comes this little guy that's running all over the place, and he did that in that first game as well as he ever did it in 18 years of playing the position, and they won the game 37-13.
You know, I wanted to ask you, but I kind of know just from reading it, the answer to the question, if the guys that you talked to enjoyed talking about it. I love that quote from Jerry Reichel when he's talking about, he first was a quarterback. I thought he was going to be a quarterback for the Vikings. Then he's sent out on a pass pattern and he runs his route and he turns, oh, the ball's not coming. Then he sees Fran running around. So he continues to get open. I thought that was a great thing. But it just sounded like these guys were enjoying reliving this game.
Yeah. I mean, like, right. It's pre, you know, obviously way, way, way pre-internet. It's like now information, everyone knows everything within 3 seconds of what, you know, we know who everyone is. We know, but here's a guy that's coming from the Eagles, just got traded for that week. He knows George Shaw. So he's like, I didn't think much of George Shaw. So Wright Kyle, former backup quarterback in the NFL in college, thinks, hey, I'm going to go to Minnesota and play quarterback. He goes, I didn't know who Fran Tarkenton was. And, you know, and Tarkenton was the third round draft pick. Although back in the day, third round, he was also the 29th overall pick. So there were much fewer teams. So he says, you know, I jog in with Tarkenton for the first time because Van Brocklin looked over and said, go, you guys get in the game. So they go running in the game. And then he doesn't know Fran Tarkenton. Probably had practiced with him one time. And then he's like, he goes, after that game, he goes, I kind of knew I was going to be a receiver the rest of my career. So, I like talking to these guys about these old games, and I think they enjoy reliving it. And just a fun time in the league. You know, the games, and Bud Grant always says this, he gives credit to today's game being, you know, obviously a better game as far as, just the athletes and everything. Although, I think I'd put Carl Eller in any era. You know, there's certain guys where you'd put, you know, I think the Vikings had some guys that could play in any era. But it is fun. It was a great time for the league, and really enjoy those that era.
Yeah, it was great. It was a fun read. I really enjoyed it. Congrats to you. And, the Vikings don't have a Super Bowl victory, but they do the unexpected from time to time. They will surprise you even from week to week. Speaking of week to week, next week is Seattle, and another huge threat to the Vikings, who really can't afford to go 0-3, and they're going to see another mobile quarterback who's a good passer as well and a great quarterback mind. A decent running game with Chris Carson and a very difficult set of receivers to cover in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockhart. What will the secondary do with that next week?
Yeah, I mean hopefully it'll be better than the last drive of last year's game, right? They should be better than they were last year. I mean, last year they were hanging on with the rookie corners, and that was, I think, the game where Harrison Smith was just exasperated by how things were going, and they with the tweet of his close up of his face, like, Cam, do your job, you know. Russell Wilson has their number, obviously. The receivers are so diverse and they're just so different and hard to defend, but it's in Minnesota. I think they've gone to Seattle like 52 years in a row or something like that. So they're at home, in the first game, you know, since the pandemic is or the stadium's not closed to fans, so should be a really loud crowd. Which and they also have Danielle Hunter now, so you know, to me, it's not so much the what the secondary can do; it's what the pass rush can do. If they get after Russell Wilson, and they have, and Danielle has a game like he had last week, different ball game than what we saw at the end of last year's game, where, you know, Russell Wilson takes him down the field and scores and wins the game.
How about the other side of the ball? Can the Vikings move against them? They got Dalvin Cook going, the offensive line. If we get the good game out of them next week, like we had, and protect Kirk, they could score some points against these guys, couldn't they?
Yeah, it looked like, you know, Dalvin took a hit on his ankle by J.J. Watt late in that game. It'll be interesting to see how he does this week, what his health is like. If he's healthy, you know, I would expect big things from the offense, because, you know, Seattle was leading the Titans at home 30-16 in the fourth quarter. And then I think they gave up a 60-yard touchdown run to Derrick Henry. They gave up over 200 yards rushing. Henry had 182 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns. So, yeah, if Dalvin Cook's healthy and that offensive line plays the way it does, they can run the ball. And if they can run the ball, then Kirk's going to be protected better. And I think that, yeah, I think it's a winnable game. I haven't quite – I'm leaning toward picking the Vikings just because they're at home. The way they played last week, the fact that Seattle struggled against the run. But I would think they would win this game.
Wow. Well, what if the unthinkable happens? I mean, the Vikings are kind of a reaction team where, you know, they put up a stinker and then they come firing back, which they just did. Now, after, you know, playing that great game and not being rewarded for it, your emotions are going to be down a little bit. If they go 3-0 and lose the home opener, are the calls for Zimmer's head just going to increase to a fever pitch? And what do you think?
Well, yeah, people will always call for it. I think if they win the game, people will call for, you know, certain, you know, that's just kind of the nature of, you know, the excitement of the NFL as fans is, you know, this guy needs to be fired. This guy needs to be hired. So, yeah, if they lose, certainly it'll be 0-3. And I don't know, were they 0-3 last year? I can't remember where they got that win, but I think
they're 0-4.
Yeah, 0-4. So 0-4 last year, 0-3 this year. You know, they were able to dig themselves out last year to get back to 6-6. I don't think people, there was probably a lot of people that weren't happy with that last year. They wanted to, like, we need the draft pick now. You know, why are you winning games? But I think as far as, like, not getting rewarded for that that game last week, it's still early enough. If that had happened and they were 0-4, now they're 0-4, 0-5, I would say, you know, stick a fork in them. But I think it's still early enough. Not getting rewarded for that is, I think they still are at a high level emotionally. And I think the way they played defensively last week, you know, throw out the numbers, they played well enough that I think that it shows that they're still listening to, that Zimmer's not lost the team, as some people would say. And I think offensively they could be even better than they were last year, and defensively they should be much better than they were last year. But they got it now. Then they got to get some wins now. And I think this week they win this week, and it becomes kind of a different mindset next week.
And as far as calling for Zimmer's head, we learned from a story from you a couple weeks ago that Zimmer doesn't give a rip what anybody says. He's just keep doing his thing.
Right. I mean, if I'm 65 years old and I, you know, got a pretty good reputation and been in the NFL for 27 years or whatever it is, I don't really worry about what people are tweeting, or because what's the worst that can happen? You know, you get fired and you become a consultant and your life slows down and you're a grandfather and you got 300 acres in Kentucky. I mean, he's not on his way up in the twilight of his year. So I wouldn't be worried if I was him either.
Well, that's a good place to take a break, because these dudes are all of a sudden going swimming in the lake, and it's just not a pretty sight. I need to look somewhere else for the moment. But we'll be right back with more of the Vikings Territory podcast and a look at the other stories inside the NFL this week. And we're back. Mark Craig is our NFL insider. And, you know, every week in the NFL, it's just another story and another game, and, or I should say another week with all kinds of games and all kinds of stories. And I know that you've got a number of them you like to talk about. Maybe we could start with the Packers. That guy's a good talker for this audience. What did you think of that game Monday night? I was not able to see it, kind of watching it online and see how it was going. A lead at half, or there would be Packers were behind at halftime, and then they came charging back and looked like the Packers of old. Would you say?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the Packers of old. I'd still be a little concerned. I mean, they're gonna have to do a lot more than that to get me to believe in my Super Bowl pick again. I thought the defense has got some issues that may not be going away. I mean, Jared Goff looked outstanding in that first half and early in the third quarter. There was hardly any pressure on him, just surprising. I mean, the Packers got some good pass rushers. The offense, I'd be happy with the offense because they put their foot on the gas and did what they were supposed to do in the second half, what they should have done in the first half. They go to San Francisco now and play a primetime game. That could be a loss. Mm-hmm. I think win that game before people can get back to the level of excitement of what they were going into the season. I'd be happy if I'm a Packers fan about the offense. I'd be a little concerned about the defense.
The Lions did a Lions thing in that game by, taking the lead and losing it. Are they the Lions, even with the new quarterback?
I don't think they're going to be the same old Lions. I mean, it'll take a while. But that first half, that did not have a Lions feel to it. And, I know they came back. I did not watch last week's game where they came back against the 49ers and scored 33. Maybe it's all garbage points or whatever, but I think the offensive line looked pretty good, and Goff looked, if he gets protection, Goff could be a decent player. So I don't see it this year, but I think maybe they might be heading in the right direction. I think certainly that under this guy, it seems to be better than the last coach. I mean, I think he was kind of a disaster from the start, and they stuck with him too long.
You sent me this stat, and I kind of liked it. Got to read it here. 20 of the 32 games have been one-score games in the fourth quarter. 10 have been decided by three or fewer points, and 3 have gone into overtime. And of course, the Vikings are right in the thick of it with 2 games decided by a total of 4 points. Comment on that, Mark. That's pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what I said about, like Parcells, and you are what your record says you are. Zim twice has said that, they're within 2 plays of being 2-0, and I think a lot of teams could say that. Almost every team that loses anymore could say, one play here, one play there. It's, 2 plays, and it's a different ball game. You're seeing – not only that, you're seeing games decided after the final buzzer. It's like that the Washington game, they kick the 48-yard field goal, time runs out, no good, Giants win. No, wait. There's an offsides penalty on that Lawrence guy. So they line up and kick a 43-yarder with no time on the clock, and Washington wins the game. So, you're seeing that a lot. The Cowboys win with a 56-yard walk-off field goal. Now, last week, to beat the Chargers in Los Angeles, last week Zuerlein, same kicker, makes a 48-yarder with a minute something left. But it leaves too much time for Tom Brady, and they go down, and their kicker Ryan Succop makes the kick. So it's you're just back and forth. I think McCarthy kind of got lucky in that he claims that because there was like 20 seconds that ran off the clock before they kicked the 56-yarder, and McCarthy was asked, why don't you try and get a little closer? And he's like, the clock that he was looking at on the board went out, so they couldn't find where the clock was. And 20 seconds roll off before they finally rush in. Someone rushes in and says, hey, here's 4 seconds, timeout. So, yeah, you're seeing this all over the league and a lot of exciting games. I mean, it doesn't get any more exciting than the way Lamar Jackson played, both bad and good, to come back and beat Patrick Mahomes for the first time and beat the Chiefs 36-35 in Baltimore. I mean, that was a great game that's going to be decided by 1 or 2 plays. Yep. So, a lot of exciting games in the league.
This is just what the NFL ordered. Games like that are just going to keep fueling fantasy football and betting and the excitement and the fandom. It's great for the league, and it's great fun for us to watch it. I like this note you pass along. Teddy Bridgewater's 2-0. How about that?
Yeah, you could say, you know, the detractors would say they haven't beaten anyone, but they're one of seven teams that are 2-0. One of only two in the AFC that are 7-0. The other one,
2-0.
The Raiders. I mean, the Raiders are a surprise team. I mean, look what the Raiders have done. They've beaten, you know, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, and beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. Derek Carr, who everybody seems to always on top of him, now criticizing him, is probably the MVP 2-week front runner. Just by the way he has played, close to 900 yards passing in 2 weeks, beating two of the better teams in the league. With one of them a win on the road, so the Raiders are looking good. You know, the NFC has five 2-0 teams, so you know that's anybody's. I mean, and this week we have, you know, coming up, you got Tampa Bay going out to Los Angeles to play the Rams. You got Tom Brady against the thing Tom Brady hates the most, which is pressure up the middle from like an Aaron Donald. So that's going to be a great game to watch.
You know, you said it earlier, it's a week-to-week league. You got to always remember that, and nothing exemplifies that more than Derrick Henry against Seattle in the second half. Just, you know, what, 182 yards and three TDs. I got to mention it because he went from last week from the doormat to this, and he's on my fantasy team, and so I was smiling throughout that. So anything can happen from week to week. I mean, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, the Vikings can – kind of be consistent now, you know, with what we've seen, and I don't know if we will, but that's this. You never know what's going to happen 1 week to the next in the NFL.
Well, I think if the Viking, you know, if they play, you know, penalty free like they did in that first half, being at home, there is no reason why, you know, unless Dalvin's hurt, unless he, you know, is banged up where he can't play or he's limited, there's no reason to expect anything less than the effort and the execution that they had last week in Arizona in a home game against Seattle, which just struggles against the run. So I think if they play with that same tempo, that same game plan, can win the game.
You know, one more note here I got to get in here because we haven't talked about him, and we've got all those Bears fans that listen to our podcast. And you know, the Bears with the injury to Andy Dalton could be looking at a new starting quarterback, and they're going against your Cleveland Browns. How do you see that one coming up this week?
Yeah, it'd be interesting if with Fields with a full week of practice, and you know that could be one of those upsets. I think the Browns are favored by 7.5. I could see, you know, Fields having a great first game. I definitely could see that. He didn't have a great game against the Bengals. You know, neither quarterback, although Dalton, I think, was playing well before he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Fields certainly didn't have a great game. They won the game. So very excited to see him, you know, as a guy that could be another one of those faces of the NFL. And how strange would it be to see the Bears have a quarterback, like a franchise-type quarterback?
Just like the Browns.
Yeah.
We'll have to leave it there. You know, that Central NFC North is still up for grabs. The Vikings are only one game out of first place. Yes, we're not first place now, right? So there's still a chance. So we can hope for that for next week. But, Mark, thanks a lot, as usual. And thanks to Mike behind the scenes. And we will be back here next week to do this for the wrap-up of the Seattle and Vikings games, and hopefully we'll be talking about another good performance by the Purple.
So are you going to make a prediction or what? I predicted a Vikings win. You know, I'm supposed to be the guy, the crusty old, you know, objective veteran here. I said they're going to win.
Well, I'm 0-2 so far, so I'm not sure I should. So maybe I better pick a Seattle win to see that the opposite will happen and the Vikings will win. So yeah, I think that the Seattle Seahawks coming off a tough loss, they're going to be as angry and determined and emotional as the Vikings are coming off their dispiriting loss. So it's going to be a really good game. But you know that I've seen that that quarterback do some things.
Who'd you pick? I got lost in your explanation. Who'd you pick?
Seattle Seahawks and another, another 3-point game. Yep.
Wow.
Doesn't happen often, folks. I don't pick against the Vikings often, especially against Mike Zimmer. I think he puts a team out there that competes, but I think next week's going to be tough, and we'll be back to break it down for you. Thanks, and have a great week, and we'll see you then. And as Joel, my buddy Joel, used to say, skull.